Killer Innovations Podcast for Sunday, April 10th, 2006. Coming to you from Sunnyvale, California. Show number 51. Welcome to this week's Killer Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, thanks for the feedback on last week's show, show number 50. It was quite a challenge to put together all those listener comments. Didn't realize how much time it was going to take trying to lay out all that audio, but it was enjoyable. I thought it was a great show, and I truly thank all of the listeners for the support over the last year as we now move into year two of the podcast and hopefully many years more. Please continue to send your feedback. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can leave me a voicemail feedback line at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. Also, feel free to send me an invite if you are part of LinkedIn as part of the business social network. If you're going to contact me by Skype or by LinkedIn, please remember to tell me that you're a listener of the podcast. I get a large number of invites or a large number of pings during the day on Skype. So if you tell me that you're a listener, then I'll go ahead and accept. Otherwise, I tend not to accept those invites. To make it easier for all the listeners to stay up with everything that's going on, please visit the killerinnovations.com website. The website is currently going under redesign, so hopefully we're going to have a new look and feel here for the site soon. There are now separate sites for the Killer Innovations community, what we call the KI community. That's where you as a listener can join in on the conversations with other listeners. You can post your questions. You can ask for assistance from listeners with different areas of expertise. Or you can just post interesting articles that you're finding about innovation, creativity, and et cetera. There's also now a site for what's called the KI Toolkit. These are books, magazines, creativity card decks, etc. So feel free to run out and take a look at the KI Community Toolkit and take a look at what's posted. I haven't really posted anything up there probably in the last week or so, or maybe a couple weeks. I'll try to get out there and keep that up to date. And then also events and appearances. So this kind of lets you see where I'm going to be and what part of the world, or if I'm going to be in your area. If I'm going to be in your area or you're going to be at a similar event that I'm going to be at, please drop me an email, or you can post a comment right there directly and potentially propose a meetup of listeners at a given event. So again, thanks for the feedback. Continue to coming. Please join in on the community. I spent a lot of time producing content, but also a lot of the ideas for content in the shows comes from you, the listeners. So please send me your thoughts. Send me links to other articles that you've come across. And we'll try to work those into the upcoming podcast. And now, let's move on to this week's content. This week, segment one, is the importance of the innovation process. Now, when you look historically, and you look at what most businesses refer to as innovation, they typically use the term R&D. And R&D operated on its own. And it was quite successful, because when products were simpler, the industrial process was less mature, less steps, and competition was less fierce. Companies could make new products and be reasonably certain that the customers would buy them. This kind of lackadaisical view from history is borne out in the auto industry. In the 60s and 70s, my father actually sold materials and et cetera into the steel industry and into the auto industry. And then all of a sudden we had competition from Japan. And that whole industry, that whole market, and the impact on the economy was significant from the standpoint that companies just kind of had this natural assumption that when I build the next product, customers are just automatically going to buy it when competition was much less severe. In those days, the R&D, the manufacturing, the marketing, the sales, these silos could do their jobs independently with really little care or incentive to manage across the departmental boundaries. In fact, it was kind of anticipated that there would be these clear boundaries, these clear roles and responsibilities. Teams were constructed, so there was a marketing team and there was an R&D team, but the two should not mix. If you look at the innovation benchmarks historically, and you go back and you look at companies and you try to determine, does R&D slash innovation investment have some financial impact on the organization? The innovation benchmarks kind of prove this out, that there are these silos, and that these silos actually inject significant inefficiencies into the innovation process. When you look at the link between R&D spending and performance, these trends tend to be strongest in those areas most under the control of the R&D silo, such as product design, and weakest in those areas where cross-functional collaboration is most difficult, such as commercialization. So, what would be an innovation benchmark that reinforces kind of strong linkage to the R&D spending? One would be gross margin. If you're coming up with a better mousetrap, then the natural assumption is that you're going to be able to fund or create products that customers are willing to pay for and willing to pay for that higher margin. Areas where the correlation is weak between R&D spend and against these silos is around things such as sales, gross revenue. In those cases, it isn't just about the product, but you have to have the entire organization aligned in order to drive top-line revenue. So you may have a great product and generate great gross margin, but if the silos are not working together, it doesn't matter how much you spend on R&D. The issue is that you're not going to drive that sales revenue or the top-line revenue number unless the silos are working together very, very well. And the problem is that many executives think it's about money. So those executives who are thinking about throwing more money at the R&D and innovation are under the mistaken belief that it's going to make a difference. It's not. It's really not about the money. In fact, I'll think about it for a future podcast, but there's actually a correlation that says less money, actually kind of constraining the dollars, actually helps the innovation process versus having unending budgets without any idea of how you're ever going to spend it. So actually constraining that budget can actually drive and create some really breakthrough thinking. So in this case, executives have to understand that it's not about the money. It's really about the fact that there's shorter product life cycles, there's an ever faster flow of new products and services, and the competition is getting stiffer out there. Basically, the result is that there has been an increase in the competitive value of a fast and effective innovation process. So when a company is seeking to grow through innovation, it's really more important about developing what I call a robust business creation model of creating. It's not about the product. It's not about the individual service. You've got to build an entire business around it. And you have to have good cross-functional capabilities. And it's not about the budget. So again, you have to have this kind of robust business creation model that you put around any given product or different idea. And you have to be able to have a good means to drive cross-functional capabilities. When you look at the financial returns on innovation, they really depend on the effectiveness of this overall innovation process, being the way that a company generates, selects, develops, and commercializes the idea. And this is really about this whole business creation. It's all of these things. So which of these steps is the biggest risk of failure? Well, that's easy for me. It really comes down to this issue of commercialization. You can generate ideas, you can select them, you can get, you know, people to actually develop it. But where you typically run, where I would say 90% of the failures occur, is in this commercialization phase. The product or service can only succeed if all of the functions, R&D, marketing, manufacturing, sales, service, are integrated as a team and each function is doing its part to support the value proposition through the seamless launch of this product or this idea. So what are you to do? If you look at the leading companies who are winning through innovation, they do four things very well. First, they align the innovation strategy with their corporate strategy. Now, you would think this would be obvious, but when you look at most companies, they are disconnected. You need to sit down and understand the corporate strategy and align the innovation strategy to support the corporate goals. If you don't do this, and let's say you're running an innovation group, or you've been asked to set up an innovation group within your business, and you don't align with that corporate strategy, then you're going to have a hard time getting management support for it. You're going to have a hard time getting departments or organizations within the businesses to support what you're doing. If you can show how your innovation is directly aligned and impacting that corporate strategy, then people are going to be much more willing to provide that kind of air cover from a management perspective and resource support, both human and capital resources, in order for it to be successful. Now, this does not mean that you just accept the corporate strategy as is. There are many times when thinking about innovations can actually shift or change the corporate strategy. You need to be willing to speak up and contribute, but you have to recognize that the two have to be working together. They cannot be counter. They can't even be just slightly off, because if they are, people are going to pick up on it, and they're going to focus on aligning themselves with the corporate strategy, and the innovation strategy is going to struggle. Second, make the right bets. Now, this is a challenge for every company. Where do you put the R&D investment? Which ideas are worth the dollars? How much should you put behind it at which stage? It's a tough challenge, but those who can do a good job of understanding and making the right bets are the ones that are going to try to be the winners. You need a strong portfolio management skill. You need to take the emotion out of it, and you need to be able to treat the things that are in the innovation pipeline as a portfolio. What is going to give you the best return on that investment? Which ones should you accelerate? Which ones should you de-emphasize? The hardest part is constantly ranking and then sometimes even killing projects that are underway. Now, killing the project is extremely emotional. And it's hard on the teams that have been putting their heart and soul into something. But you have to avoid the risk of kind of this, we're almost there. You've invested this much so far. There's only a little bit more to go before it's going to be the big win. Now, obviously, there's some truth to that. You have to be honest with yourself. But at the same time, you have to avoid the constant, you know, always this role of over-investing into ideas. You have to be willing to recognize when something is not going to work out or it's not going to be competitive in the marketplace. And you've got to be willing to pull the trigger, kill a project at whatever stage it's in. Even if it's just prior to commercialization, if you see no way that this is going to be successful, why go through the process? You can then kill that project, free up that human and capital resources to put onto something that has a possibility of having impact. Three, manage the pipeline with speed and efficiency. You're going to have an innovation process, and it's just going to mimic kind of the old way of doing things, then why do it? You need to create a pipeline that's going to allow you to accelerate the delivery and execution of new products and services. You need to have good, strong program management skills as part of this when managing the pipeline. Now, you can have, you know, very creative individuals, but you can manage an innovation and a creativity process just as well as you do in managing any of the other activities that you do within your business. You can apply that same program management rigor. And in fact, organizations that do a clear program management process against innovation have a much higher level of success. In previous podcasts, you've heard me talk about gate milestone processes. I'm a big fan of gate milestone processes. And if you look at the tools that are used, 70% of the big winners, those that have the highest impact from innovation value, use a gate milestone type process in order to ensure everybody's on the same page, everybody knows the execution, there's clear gates of go, no go, to take the emotion out of it and allows for rational thinking and rational analysis on the impact that any idea and innovation is going to have on the business. So you need to have good program management. The other thing you need to have when managing the pipeline with speed and efficiency is around knowledge management. Now, in the early days, you're not going to have much in the knowledge management, but as you continue to make progress and as you continue to deliver products and innovations to the marketplace, the lessons learned, the ability to share that with new teams coming on, new methodologies and approaches that prove to be more efficient can be key to feeding your process and allowing for constant improvement. So early on, make sure that you've got a good knowledge capture, knowledge management, post-mortem process. So every product as it goes out, every product that gets killed, do a very detailed post-mortem on why didn't this succeed? What could you have seen ahead of time to give you the indication sooner? It's, you know, whatever the knowledge that you've gained from it, put it into a knowledge system so that subsequent teams can learn and take advantage of that expertise. And fourth, and probably the most important, but also the one that's probably the most difficult, is changing or aligning your organizational DNA to drive results. Now, this tends to be one of the biggest challenges and one that I probably get the most questions from in the form of emails is how do you align organizational DNA to be supportive of innovation? There needs to be things such as organizational structure. We talked earlier about silos, you know, manufacturing and marketing and sales and R&D, et cetera. What I tend to find is that when you have something that's in the innovation pipeline, you're going to accelerate this, is you need to take members of each of those teams and put them into one team. They cannot stay in the silos when you're talking about trying to accelerate. Negative organizational inertia will just suck the life out of a project faster than anything. You need to get organizational structure working to the benefit of delivering these new products. Now, once the product is launched, then those need to go back into the normal organizations in order to support or take advantage of scale, etc. Second, you need to have proper incentives. How do you incent the team members to do everything in their power to deliver the value that's being defined for a new product or service? So what are the incentives? And lastly, predictable governance and decision-making. There's nothing more demoralizing to a team than have management step in and begin to make random, irrational decisions. If there's a defined process, such as a gate process, where you know at each gate management's going to make a go, no-go decision, you understand what the criteria is for a go, no-go decision, then the teams can then rationalize, are we ready? Are we going to clear this gate? Are we not going to, you know, there's no ambiguity. There's clear governance and there's clear decision-making process. So again, if you're going to be successful in the form of creating your innovation process, there's four things outside of having the base process. There's four things that you have to do extremely well. One, align your innovation strategy with your corporate strategy. Two, make the right bets. Three, manage the pipeline with speed and efficiency. And four, combine your organizational DNA to drive results. Now the question you need to ask yourself is look back into your organization or look back into yourself from your career. How good are you or how good is your organization at being best in class against these four critical skill sets? Moving on to segment two, weak versus strong trends. Now, last week I was in LA for a speech by Daniel Burris. Daniel Burris is the author of Techno Trends. This is a book that came out late 80s, early 90s, if I recall, talking about the technology trends that were emerging in the marketplace. Daniel has turned this into a research organization called Burris Research that basically publishes a newsletter called Techno Trends. I think it's actually relatively inexpensive. I think it's like in the $30 a year range. Comes out monthly. You can go out there and find it. Just look, just search under Techno Trends or Daniel Burris, B-U-R-R-U-S, I believe. He publishes out a whole, it isn't just technology as you would think about it. It's medical, industrial, etc. But during this speech in LA, in which Daniel was talking about trends, he brought up a couple of key points that I just wanted to share with you during in this segment too, talking about weak versus strong trends. Now, let's face it, every one of us is looking for a trend or a signal that's going to unlock the next big market opportunity. You know, we're always out there looking for that one thing. We also want to be the first one to come up with that trend or find that trend in order to get first mover advantage. And we tend to grasp at any trend that even looks reasonable. Kind of like the 1849 gold rush in California, where all of a sudden everybody flooded into California thinking that they were going to make it rich in gold. We tend to grasp at any trend that we potentially think is going to lead us to our own pot of gold. But be careful. Daniel points out that you have to be aware that there are two kinds of trends, a weak trend and a strong trend. So what's the difference? A weak trend is one that looks reasonable, but is not guaranteed to come true. It's not something you're going to want to bet the business on. Versus a strong trend is one that you can take to the bank, and it's all but assured to come true. Now, we tend to always view a trend as a trend, but it's important that you understand the difference between a weak trend and a strong trend. So what's an example? Well, Daniel uses this example for a weak trend around Elvis impersonators. And his point of this example is really to talk about the fallacy of looking at historical statistics to try to project to the future. So in the case of Elvis impersonators, if you tracked the number of Elvis impersonators in the U.S. since the death of Elvis, today you would have predicted that one out of every three people living in the U.S. would be an Elvis impersonator. So you look at the early days after Elvis passed on, you look at the plot out the trends of Elvis impersonators, and you draw the line. 2006, one out of every three people living in the U.S. should be an Elvis impersonator. Now, we kind of get caught up in this fallacy that statistics don't lie. Well, they don't lie, but they also can project a future that just is not reasonable. You can track this trend. You could have seen the dots. You could have laid out your line. You can see this nice curve going up. You could have extended the line and come to some kind of a conclusion that would have been wrong. Now, obviously, this is a weak signal. But what makes it a weak signal? Because you're assuming that there's going to be some human nature that can be predictable. And what you tend to find is that with weak signals tend to be tied to the fact that you cannot predict human nature. So what's an example of a strong trend? Well, the example that Daniel used in his speech was about the aging baby boomers. Well, let's face it, we're all getting older. I'm the tail end of the baby boomers. But let's face it, the baby boomers are getting older, which in itself is triggering other trends, such as the impact on the medical system, vacation and leisure industries, etc. But the fact is that baby boomers are getting older. It's a fact. You know exactly how many births there occurred all the way through the boomer years. You can project out when they're going to turn 65. We all age at the same time. There's nothing we can do about getting older. If there was, I'd be the first one to volunteer to not get older. But the reality is that this is a trend that you can take to the bank. So strong trends are ones that you can bet the business. Weak trends are ones that may or may not come true. But Weak trends are still useful. Don't ignore them. By recognizing that they are weak, what I do with some of these weak signals is I run scenarios and predict the outcomes. So what happens? We talk about Moore's Law. I would say that Moore's Law is not a strong trend. It's actually a weak trend. So what happens if someone figures out a way to double the acceleration on Moore's Law or slow it down? What is going to happen to the computer industry? Same thing with network bandwidth. Same thing with, the mobile industry, the music industry, the movie television industry. Look at any of their trends, and what would happen if it happened twice as fast or half as fast to what the trend line is telling you, and then look at what the scenarios would be and what's going to be the impact on you, your company, your industries, and the overall global economy. So strong trends, take them to the bank, use those as your baseline. Weak trends, use those as trajectories. Run scenarios that says the trend actually goes faster or the trend goes much, much slower. What would happen to you, your company, your industry, and the global economy? Moving on to segment 3, the killer question of the week. For many killer questions, there's homework that has to have been done before you could really tackle the question. Now, I know sometimes I get on here and I'll give you kind of just throw out the question, knowing that you're going to have to go off and do the homework. This week's a little bit different. I'm going to tell you what homework you need to go do before you attack this week's killer question. So this week's killer question is going to focus on not how to come up with an idea for a new product or service. This week's killer question is going to be tied to segment 1 about how do you improve your innovation process. So the desired outcome, again, is to improve your innovation process. So the homework is benchmark your innovation process against your competitors and the industry that you compete in overall. So how do you do this benchmark? First of all, you need to gather some statistics. First off, what is the ratio of R&D spend against sales for you, your competitors, and people in the industry? Now, you've heard me in the past talk about that R&D spend as a percentage of sales is not that useful of a piece of information. But stay with me. I'll explain why it's important here in a second. Second, the ratio of R&D spend against gross margin. Now, as you heard in segment 1, we talk about the fact that gross margin is actually a good indicator of the overall R&D efficiency within the organization. So in this case, if you come up with a better mousetrap, customers are going to be willing to spend more money giving you a margin benefit for the innovation that you've created. Third statistic, the speed of new product introductions. How many new products? And you can classify whether that's you're going to allow new models of existing products or fundamentally new. But make sure that you set the statistics the same when you do the analysis across your competitors. But how many products is you and your competitors introducing every year in the marketplace? And fourth, IP, the intellectual properties. In this case, the only statistic that you're going to potentially be able to leverage publicly is the number of patents. You can go on to the patent offices, search by company, and you can see how many patents have been issued to you, your competitors, and others in the industry. So again, ratio of R&D spend against sales, ratio of R&D spend against gross margin, speed of new product introductions, and fourth, intellectual property. Now, why R&D spend against sales? Let me jump back to that here for a second. The R&D spend against sales actually will highlight inefficiencies in the silos. So for instance, if you end up with a very strong correlation between R&D spend and gross revenue, but your sales are, the R&D to sales is very weak, that is pointing out the inefficiencies that you have within the silos during the commercialization process. You're delivering value to the product. Where you are suffering is in the actual commercialization phase of the business. So once you have this information, then ask yourself the following questions. First off, what does this data reveal about your position against your competitors and the industry as a whole. Now, be honest. Don't fluff this off. Oh, we're about even. Look at it. What does this data reveal about your position against your competitors and the industry as a whole? Now, I've got one executive who I've spent a little bit of time with here recently who's kind of beat this into my head and a lot of other people's head about looking at these trends, benchmarks, and data about your competitors. And the point he makes is that if you stare at data long enough, it will eventually confess. So don't take the quick way out or shortchange this. Stare at the data long enough and it will eventually confess. What does this data reveal about your position against your competitor and the industry as a whole? And then the next question is what changes in the innovation process could establish you as the industry leader in best practices? Don't focus on a me too. Don't try to copy the processes of your competitors. Look at the data and then brainstorm ideas on what changes to your innovation process could establish you as the industry leader. And with that, let's wrap it up for this week. Let's see, we're coming up right on 30 minutes, so good, we're going to end up on time here. So thanks for listening. Without you, you viewed this subscriber, there would be no show. As I said last week's show, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around, does it make a sound? The same thing with a podcast. If I publish a podcast but there weren't any listeners, would it be a show? No. So thank you for listening. Keep the feedback coming. Send me your questions, your stories of innovation, whether they're yourself or you've come across an interesting story. I'm getting a lot of feedback from new listeners who have been catching up through the podcast and remember some of the stories that I worked on the Marriott, for instance, and Black & Decker and L.L. Bean. Those stories are incredibly hard to write. They take a lot of time. I'm going to try to do those like once a month here. But if you find an interesting story, send it my way. Send me show feedback. Do you like the shows? Do you not like the shows? Is there a criticism? And in fact, I did get a criticism on a show in the past. And I have to admit, this listener is right. I made kind of the offhand comment about tree hugging. We were talking about innovations in the environmental area, and I made the comment that, quote, I'm not a tree hugger. Now, I did not mean to offend anybody. I did get one email from one listener with regards to making it sound like environmental was not important. Believe me, it is important. Did not mean to offend anybody. Environmental is important, and I'll try to keep those kind of comments to myself and impose them upon you, the listener. So those kinds of feedbacks do have impact. So continue to send me your feedbacks. And also, if you have content recommendations, what do you want in an upcoming show? Let me know, and we'll try to work it in. So don't forget to vote for your favorite podcast at Podcast Alley. It's the easiest way for you to say thanks to the producers of your favorite podcast for the time and the expense they put into producing the content you enjoy. Easiest way to vote for Killer Innovations is to go to killerinnovations.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a field where you can put your email address in and click vote. I do not keep that email address. That is just simply used by Podcast Alley to make sure that you only vote once. And so therefore, what will happen is you'll put your email address in, you click vote, Podcast Alley will send you an email, you click on the URL, and then your vote is counting. Feel free to put your comments about the show over at iTunes. A number of you have already done that, and I do appreciate that. New listeners have commented on the fact that they do read those comments to select the new shows that they subscribe to. Yahoo Podcast also has an area for you to post your comments, or any other sites that you visit. Let other people know about the podcast. So again, thanks for listening. Tell others about the podcast. I'm serious about this. I'm looking to grow the listener base. One, to get more people into the KI community so we can have more interactions with the podcast. So tell others. This week's assignment is for you to tell two people you work with about the podcast. and get them to listen. So these aren't just your friends. Your objective here is you're gonna be a guerrilla innovation agent in your business. You're gonna go tell two people at work about the podcast. So this isn't you trying to persuade them the importance of innovation. Let me help you. And I can do this by having you get them to listen to the podcast. So get two people to listen. And this could be the easiest way for you to change the culture at your work towards being more innovative. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.